Radio Prague News.
President Václav Klaus has called the Civic Democrats' defeat in Saturday's Senate elections a referendum on Prime Minister Topolánek. Emil Kučera, a Czech entomologist convicted in Darjeeling of catching rare insects, has allegedly left India for the Czech Republic. And mist caused disruption to flights at Prague's Ruzyně Airport on Sunday morning. Following the Civic Democrats' defeat in Saturday's Senate elections, President Václav Klaus has come out in criticism of Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek. Speaking on the television station Prima on Sunday, Mr. Klaus, himself an honorary patron of the Civic Democrats, said that the party's routing in Saturday's elections was nothing other than a referendum on Topolánek. Mr. Klaus refused to say whether he would prefer to see someone else at the head of the party, but did say that Mr. Topolánek, in his opinion, needed to act less arrogantly. The Civic Democratic Party's leadership is meeting on Sunday to discuss whether to hold an extraordinary congress, at which, among other things, a new leader could be elected. Emil Kučera, a Czech entomologist convicted in Darjeeling of catching rare insects, has allegedly left India for the Czech Republic. Mr. Kučera was sentenced to 3 years in prison by an Indian court last month for poaching insects from a national park. The entomologist maintains his innocence. On Sunday, the head of the Czech Entomological Society, Vladislav Malý, told the press that his colleague Emil Kučera had left India for the Czech Republic. The Czech Foreign Ministry has not confirmed this information, but its spokesperson Zuzana Opletalova did say that the Czech embassy in India had been in contact with Emil Kučera about his departure. Thick mist at Prague's Ruzyně Airport caused flights to be delayed, diverted and cancelled on Sunday morning. 12 planes were redirected to other nearby airports to land, and some services were cancelled outright. A spokesperson said that normal service had resumed for the most part by Sunday afternoon, but advised passengers to check the airport's website for the status of their flight nonetheless. In related news, train services between Prague's Masarykovo Nádraží and Vysočany station were disrupted on Saturday after important telecommunications cables between the two stations were stolen. A normal service was expected to resume on Sunday, a spokesperson said. The cable is thought to have been stolen to be sold as scrap metal. In September, trains into and out of Prague's main station, Hlavní Nádraží, were severely disrupted when thieves stole communications cable twice there in 1 week. The Czech Republic has slipped down the World Bank's Doing Business rankings for 2009. Last year, the Czech Republic ranked 65th in the list of 181 countries. This year, it's fallen to 75th place. Above the Czechs rank countries such as Slovakia, Turkey, Kazakhstan and Georgia. The list was compiled based on research conducted between June 2007 and June 2008. The Czech Republic ranked particularly badly when it came to the paying taxes section of the survey. The study found that filling out various taxation documents took businesses in the Czech Republic 930 hours a year. And a quick look at the weather now. Cloudy skies are forecast for the next couple of days, with temperatures rising slightly, ranging between 12 and 16 degrees Celsius. I'm Rosie Johnston, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you are tuned to Radio Prague with me, Ruth Franíková. Coming up in today's programme, Pavla Horáková will be here in just a minute to answer your questions and quote from your letters in mailbox. Then we'll bring you this week's letter from Prague with Ian Willoughby. And then Bernie Higgins will look at the life and work of Alexandra Berková. That's in Czech books, coming in just a few minutes. But first, here is Pavla Horáková with your letters in mailbox.
It's time once again to browse through your letters and emails. It's time for Mailbox. Hello and welcome to the program. Many thanks for your reception reports that never cease coming from all over the globe. I'd like to remind you that with the time change, Radio Prague begins its winter broadcast schedule. If you'd like to obtain a paper copy, please write in to Radio Prague and we will mail it to you. The list of our times and frequencies is also available on our website. On the topic of shortwave broadcasting, Cameron Archbold from Nebraska sent us this email.
I'm a listener to Radio Prague broadcasts to North America. I'd first like to thank you for the great shows that Radio Prague broadcasts. Even in the computer age, the world needs shortwave broadcasts. I like camping in the Rocky Mountain wilderness where there is no internet access and I cannot easily pick up American AM/FM stations. But Radio Prague booms into the wilderness, keeping me informed on world events. It's also very important to understand how other countries and cultures view world events, so I listen even when I'm at home to understand the views of others. I hope Radio Prague continues an English broadcast to North America for years to come.
Reginaldo Anunciação from Baramansa in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, sent us this question.
What is the date of the foundation of the famous St. Vitus Cathedral?
St. Vitus Cathedral, the traditional venue of coronations of Bohemian kings, was built on the site of an earlier Romanesque rotunda, founded in the year 925 by Prince Wenceslas. After 1060, the church was turned into a triple-nave basilica with two towers. In 1344, Charles IV, who was later to become Holy Roman Emperor, started the construction of a Gothic cathedral on the site. Its master builders, Matthias of Arras and Peter Parler, didn't live to see the cathedral finished, and in the 15th century works were halted by the Hussite movement. It was only in the second half of the 19th century that building work resumed, and the cathedral, as we know it today, was completed in 1929. Salahuddin Dola is our faithful listener from Bangladesh.
I regularly listen to all your programs. I enjoy very much your Q&A section. I have a question. Who was the first president of the Czech Republic? Please tell me something about him.
The first president of the Czech Republic was the anti-communist dissident and playwright-turned-politician Václav Havel. He served from February 2, 1993 until July 20, 2003, having previously served one term as the eighth president of Czechoslovakia from 1989 to 2002. The first president of Czechoslovakia was Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk, a former university professor, philosopher and politician. He became head of state in November 1918 and remained in office until December 1935. Rossem Ben Brahim from Tunisia wants to know,
what is the order of your country on the FIFA list?
A simple answer, the Czech Republic is currently ranked number 8. And still on the topic of football, he asks,
who is the best footballer in the history of your country?
Here the answer is not so straightforward. Some think it was the legendary forward Josef Pepi Bican. Some say it is the Juventus midfielder Pavel Nedved. 5 years ago, the Czech Football Association selected the former midfielder and coach Josef Masopust as the country's most outstanding player of the past 50 years. And from sports to architecture, it's time to repeat our listeners' competition question for one last time. We would like to know the name of the architect who designed the Hiroshima Prefectural Industrial Promotion Hall, known today as the Hiroshima Peace Memorial or the Atomic Bomb Dome. The address to write to is english@radio.cz or Radio Prague 12099 Prague. You have until Friday to mail us your answers, and there will be small prizes for four of you who answer correctly. Thanks for tuning in today, and until next week, take care.
Thanks, Pavla. Now it's time to leave the mic to Ian Willoughby, who has this week's letter from Prague.
In recent years, for the first time in my life, I actually enjoy going to the bank. And not just because I've developed a rapport with the clerk, who one day announced she was my personal banker. After a move of flat, I simply transferred my accounts to the most convenient branch. And what do you know? That branch is housed in a masterpiece of interwar Czech architecture with a fascinating history. The Legion Bank, Legionářská banka or Legio Banka for short, on Prague's Nápořičí Street, was designed by the great Czech modern architect Josef Gočár. He's perhaps best known for the classic cubist House of the Black Madonna on Celetna, which was completed in 1912. A decade later, Czechoslovakia had been founded, and Gočár adopted a more monumental, national approach known as Rondo Cubism when he designed the Legio Banka, which opened its doors in 1923. He also enlisted the help of two of the greatest of Czech sculptors, Otto Gutfreund and Jan Štrsa. Gottfreund's rich relief work on the facade features scenes connected with the military life, from painful parting from family members to returning from war. On pillars beneath the relief are four large sculptures by Stursa of the upper bodies of fighting men. The interior, meanwhile, has elements of Art Deco and furniture by Gotchar, as well as a small fountain which I find strangely calming, especially if I've got to wait a while for service at the bank. The decision to found the Legio Banca was made by leaders of the Czechoslovak legions in the Siberian city of Irkutsk in 1919. Independent legions of Czechoslovak soldiers were also formed in Italy and France during World War I, though it's those who served in Russia who are perhaps best remembered today, as their war went on for considerably longer. Between 50 and 60,000 in number, they ended up getting caught up in the Russian Civil War, fighting with the Whites against the Red Army, before making their way home in 1921 via Vladivostok and later America. Before leaving Siberia, their commanding officers had the idea of setting up a financial institution to serve former legionnaires on their return to Czechoslovakia. Previously, a cooperative called Vojenská spořitelna, Military Savings Bank, had been established for the same purpose in Russia itself. There have been claims the Legio Banca wasn't founded with the savings of returning soldiers alone. Some say the Czechoslovaks had stolen a whole train carriage full of gold bullion that had belonged to Russia's imperial family. Some of the money was spent securing their passage home, with whatever was left over being used to help set up the bank. Indeed, the building's very magnificence has been posited as evidence that the Czechoslovaks did steal the gold. However, the whole story has been frequently and roundly dismissed by historians. In any case, as stories go, it's a humdinger. And the building, which today is home to a branch of the Belgian-owned High Street Bank, CSOB, is, by any standards, quite a place.
That was Ian Willoughby with Letter from Prague. If you've just joined us, you are listening to Radio Prague, where it's now time for another edition of Czech Books, brought to you by Bernie Higgins.
Hello and welcome to Czech Books. Earlier this year, a leading author and very well-known and much-admired personality in the Czech Republic died, Alexandra Berková. She was a journalist, writer for TV, novelist and short story writer, a campaigner for social justice in many areas, as well as being a beloved teacher of many. Her novels were highly experimental in nature, mixing, for example, allegory, fairy tale and satire. In order to discuss the work of Alexandra, or Sasha, Berková, I visited Pavla Jonsonová, a cultural theorist who teaches at the Anglo-American University in Prague. Hello, Pavla.
Hello, Bernie.
Alexandra Berková was a sensation when she first emerged on the literary scene in 1986. Her first book, The Little Book with the Red Cover, I think it was sold out 60,000 copies within days.
Exactly. I remember that so well because a friend of ours gave about 20 of her friends a Christmas gift, which was the first book by Sasha Berková, and it was a true sensation.
This first book actually already showed the extent to which she was experimenting with form, because it wasn't a straight narrative. It was a number, I think, 19 short stories which were interwoven and followed the destinies of a number of female characters at the crucial points in their lives, you know, adolescence, marriage, childbirth, death, in fact. But it was already undermining our expectations of what a traditional narrative needed to offer.
Yes, it introduced a new character in Czech literature, which was an if. And so there was this if, or we could say there were those number of ifs, who if these ifs happened, you know, then life would have been so perfect. But these ifs are kind of elusive, are somewhere out there flying, but you cannot quite catch them. Yeah.
This is an example of the very playful aspect of Alexandra Berkova, who's often considered to be a very serious, rather dark interpreter of the possibilities of happiness between men and women in their personal relationships, for example. But her work is playful in this almost Joycean way.
Yes, exactly. She was a total experimenter. And I more and more think of her in the legacy of Kafka, especially, which is this kind of modernist way, this existentialist way of speaking about what happened to us. But she, of course, added this kind of funny, feminine, feminist twist, the gender viewpoint.
And she continued over the years to be one of the leading Czech literary personalities, writers. She also wrote for television. I think this was an important part of her profile.
Exactly, yes. Sasha Berková wrote for television, and that's how she got in touch with basically everyone in the country, whereas before that, of course, this was a literary elite sensation. And then she became very famous for her debates within the framework of the newly arising women's movement in Czechoslovakia and then the Czech Republic.
And she was one of the very few very public, high-profile women who were open to identifying themselves with a struggle for equal rights.
Yes, I think that for a long period she's represented the sort of most famous image of feminism in the country.
So in many respects she was always an author who was very concerned with what was going on in the society around her, and I think we can see this from one of her books, which is a clear allegory of life in the Czech Republic, or Czechoslovakia then, before 1989. It describes a life of pure absurdity where the bellies and the corpses rule. And this is her book, Magoria, or A Tale of Great Love. And I'll just read a very short extract from the satire so you can get a flavour of the humour and the experimental nature of her writing. And this is the father of the family fantasising about her rebellion. You stiflers and defilers of values, who gave you the right to elevate your obtuse cretinism to a general yardstick and consign to oblivion whatever exceeds by as little as an inch the common or garden bound? The pot bellies nod and exhalate mist. Who gave, I ask you, you self-appointed inquisitors, who gave you the right to represent your own shallow interests as the interests of the people of this land? The pot bellies nod and exhalate mist. The pot belly with the curly tuft takes notes. No one, eunuchs, so hearken unto me as I call aloud. Be ye stripped of your privileges, fat savings accounts and fetid benches in the Senate, the which you've acquired by guile. Be ye stripped of your special physicians and armed guards and obliged to earn a living by that work in whose name for years you've rewarded your own purses. He is speaking beautifully. He had no idea he could speak so beautifully. Away with you, you parasites of the living, you body snatchers, away with your tutelage. Dad sat down with a thumping heart. The pot bellies nod and exhalate mist. Dad smiles, carried away by the sound of his own voice. Just to let you know, Mum, I told them right and proper. And he began to listen to the coughing and scraping of chairs. Now a forest of hands will shoot up and the consuls will be tossed out the window, inevitable in the end. Somebody had to start the ball rolling. Many people who talk about Sasha Berkova talk about her great heart and her compassion.
That's exactly my feeling that I got from Sasha from the absolutely first moment. And it's this golden-hearted woman who comes up to you and there's no barriers. And you feel that you have someone who is interested in you, somebody who really wants to know who you are and that the conversation that you're having is absolutely precious.
I think this ties in with what one friend of hers, Libuše Ludvíková, who works at the Pen Club here in Prague, and Alexandra was instrumental in setting up Czech Pen Club after 1989. And I asked her about Alexandra and what she would say about her. And the first thing she said was that she was the most wonderful of teachers who absolutely devoted herself to her students.
Yes, she taught at a literary academy, and I heard it personally from several of her students, what an incredible teacher she was. And I imagine it must have been like going to a psychoanalysis class or to classes of loving and being taken seriously by someone who is an already respected writer.
I'd like now to move to a discussion briefly of her last major work, Temná láska, Dark Love, many considered one of the most significant, interesting, important works of the last decade, but it was also quite controversial. Many people found it a very dark work.
She herself had this funny comment, like, have I not really gone too far here? And originally she wanted to name it The Old Woman and the Sea, which speaks for itself. But it is not that dark. I mean, there's a similar humor to Kafka. She's using all these clues. Of course, mainly this is psychoanalysis and her take on it, but it's so hilariously mixed with Harlequin's that it really makes a unique reading that is dark, but at the same time funny in an eerie way.
When you say Harlequins, I think for British listeners, they would understand this better as Mills and Boone. So she actually uses the popular romantic fiction to underpin the more serious things that she's saying. And the book, in fact, is structured around conversations between a middle-aged woman and her psychotherapist.
Yes, the main heroine, Carolina, has this kind of life crisis when she walks naked on one of the main streets of Prague, going to buy groceries in a bistro. And she is retelling this moment to an older woman psychoanalyst.
The book is structured in three parts, the beginning of this description of a love affair and then the darker aspects of the relationship. And I'd just like to read a brief extract from the second part. When he's not attending to his toys, he walks round me in large circles, at a distance so that I'm not able to touch him. He examines me with concentration. He doesn't mind that I'm dirty. He likes dirt. He's dirty too, and he stinks. He doesn't talk to me. He doesn't talk with me, not even in moments of contentment when he's scrawling on my body with his crayons, when he's driving his tanks over me and leading his battles, not even when he's sniffing at me. Not even then does he answer my questions. He is silent. If I speak, he freezes as if turned to stone. Looking away, he waits for me to fall silent. Then he spits on his drawing and angrily rubs at it with his elbow. Then he simply continues where he left off. In her conversations with her analyst, the analyst tells her, you could always have escaped. Do you feel to an extent that Alexandra Berkova was this incredible personality who was somehow trapped within all of these political forces?
Of course, Carolina, the main heroine, is trapped in the same way as, let's say, the greatest woman writer of Czech literature in the 19th century, Božena Němcová, was a victim of the situation that she lived in.
That's a very interesting comparison with Božena Němcová, who was also an incredible, open, active political woman and writer. And many people have felt the loss of such a personality very much since her death in June. What do you think her legacy will be?
I believe that many, many numerous students that she's brought up will be first kind of bathed in this glorious love that she kind of radiated through her personality. That might be the strongest thing. But also from her influence as a writer, from the literary legacy, that would be some kind of feeling of necessity to reinterpret, I don't know, if fairy tales of harlequins or how to call the myths that we live in, and sort of being prepared that these myths are just myths and that they have to deal with reality, which is dark love.
I'm very glad to have had the opportunity to say something about a very complicated, very important, very interesting writer. And fortunately, it's possible to read Alexandra Berkova's work in some English language anthologies, at least extracts, and there'll be information about these on the website. And I'd like to thank you very much, Pavla, for sharing your personal memories and also your ideas about the literature. Thank you, Pavla.
You're welcome. Thank you, too.
Thank you.
Bernie Higgins there with this fortnight's edition of Czech Books. And that is all we've got time for today here on Radio Prague. Don't forget, we welcome all opinions and questions. Our email address is english@radio.cz. And the postal address is Vinohradská 12, 120-99, Prague. From myself, Ruth Franíková, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks for listening and take care.